Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, October 13th, 2025. From the front page of the paper, Illinois Agriculture, Growers Eye Great Color. Pumpkin harvest underway after heat weakens crops in some areas. By Rhiannon Branch, Farm Week. Morton. October is a busy month for the top pumpkin-producing state, and while consumers likely won't see the effects, Mother Nature challenged some Illinois fields this season. Jack Laxon is part of the eighth generation of Eckert's Orchard in Belleville, where they grow up to 60 acres of pumpkins that are mostly you-pick or sold at their on-farm stores. We had a pretty wet spring and early summer, which made for perfect planting conditions, he told Farm Week. But I think we only have 60 to 75% of a full crop due to poor pollination weather, including extreme heat and drought. It is hard on the plants and hard on pollinators to help pollinate the plants. Harvest began on time in mid-September, and moisture early in the season helped the earlier planted pumpkins size up with good weight and color. I think it's really the stuff that sets a little bit later in the summer that we've maybe seen some lack of size and weight, although the color is great, he explained. Overall, we've been pretty pleased, despite having only about 3/4 of a full crop. Laxon said they usually produce more than they need, so even with the drop in production, he expects to have enough to meet their normal demand. The season is not yet over, so for the stuff that's set a little bit later, we'll see what we really get out of it in terms of size and weight. But as it stands right now, we're in pretty good shape, he said. Farther north, in the pumpkin capital of the world, weather was more cooperative for a plentiful pumpkin crop. My decorative pumpkins may have produced the best crop ever for our final year, John Ackerman of Morton told Farm Week. Pumpkins generally like it dry within reason, and fortunately they got the rain when they needed it early, and only got exceptionally dry here after they set fruit. While Ackerman does not have a commercial contract for processed pumpkins this season, he has stayed in touch with local farmers who grow for Libby's. To my understanding, the yields have been about average, roughly 23 tons of pumpkin per acre, with harvest on track and around 2/3 finished, Ackerman said. I heard the pumpkins are very solid, which is one of the characteristics they test for each year. But Ackerman recognized that quality and quantity of pumpkins varied from farm to farm this year. Pumpkins, by their nature, are a very fickle plant, and a rain at the wrong time can make it abort fruit and try to start over, he said. I feel bad for fellow growers who are having a rough time this year. The most recent census of agriculture data shows Illinois maintained its leading position in pumpkin acreage in 2022, harvesting more than twice as many pumpkin acres as any of the other top states, at 17,600 acres. Also leading in yield, Illinois produced 634 million pounds of pumpkins in 2022, more than the next five productive states combined. The USDA estimates almost 80% of pumpkin acres in Illinois are devoted to varieties destined for pie filling or other processing uses, like these being harvested in a Tazewell County field. From page 3, local news. Police: Boy Pelts Woman with Rock. By Tony Reed. Decatur. Police report that a 13-year-old Decatur boy was violently persistent in his efforts to get a mother's children to leave their house and meet him outside. He kept throwing rocks at the woman's window instead of just knocking on the door, said Sergeant Steve Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department. It was making a lot of noise, and when the woman came outside, he threw a rock at her and hit her in the back. The incident happened around 4 p.m. Saturday in the 500 block of West Center Street, and Hagemeyer said the victim did not report being injured. Police officers found the boy, who was given an appointment to speak to a detective with the police department's juvenile division, and the officer will decide what action to take next. Chief, Three Displaced After Fire by Tony Reed. Decatur. Firefighters said smoke detectors helped save the lives of three adults who were alerted in time to flee a blaze that burned out the second-floor bedroom of a house in the 1600 block of North Union Street in Decatur. The alarm was raised just after 11 p.m. Saturday, and Decatur Fire Chief Neil Elder said crews arrived to find heavy fire showing from the two second-floor bedroom windows. But he said the home's occupants had already managed to make their escape. The three adult occupants, who had been asleep at the time, were awakened by the home's working smoke detectors, Elder said in a news release. Thick black smoke and intense heat initially made their escape difficult, but they were ultimately able to exit the structure safely before firefighters arrived. Elder said his crews used a rapid and aggressive interior attack with two hand lines to knock the fire down. He said this was followed by extensive operations to locate and extinguish hot spots in multiple areas. The residents sustained significant fire, smoke, and water damage, rendering it temporarily uninhabitable, Elder added. The occupants are being assisted by friends and family. The cause of the blaze is being investigated by the fire department's Fire Investigation Bureau. From page 5, National and World News, The Digest. Trump warns Russia on long-range missiles. Aboard Air Force One. President Donald Trump warned Russia on Sunday that he may send Ukraine long-range Tomahawk missiles if Moscow doesn't settle its war there soon, suggesting that he could be ready to increase the pressure on Vladimir Putin's government using a key weapons system. I might say, look, if this war is not going to get settled, I'm going to send them Tomahawks, Trump told reporters aboard Air Force One as he flew to Israel. The Tomahawk is an incredible weapon, very offensive weapon, and honestly, Russia does not need that. Trump said, I might tell them that if the war is not settled, that we may very well. He added, we may not, but we may. I think it's appropriate to bring it up. Four killed in shooting on St. Helena Island. St. Helena Island, South Carolina. A mass shooting early Sunday at a crowded bar on an idyllic island considered to be the largest Gullah community on the South Carolina coast left four people dead and at least 20 injured, officials said. A large crowd was at Willie's Bar and Grill on St. Helena Island when sheriff deputies arrived and found many people with gunshot wounds. An estimated 5,000 or more Gullah people living on the island trace their ancestry back to enslaved West Africans who once worked rice plantations in the area before being freed by the Civil War. The Beaufort County Sheriff's Office said in a statement on the social platform X, "We ask for your patience as we continue to investigate this incident." Madagascar. The president of Madagascar said Sunday an attempted coup was underway in the Indian Ocean country, just a day after members of an elite army unit joined youth-led protests against the government and called for the president to step down. President Andre Rajoelina's office offered no details on who was behind the attempted coup. Road closed. Estonia temporarily closed access for its citizens to a road they normally use that passes through a stretch of Russian territory, after the interior minister reported a group of Russian soldiers standing there, Estonia public broadcaster said on Sunday. border fight. Afghanistan said Sunday it killed 58 Pakistani soldiers in overnight border operations in response to what it called repeated violations of its territory and airspace. Pakistan's army gave far lower casualty figures, saying 23 troops were killed. China Sea. A Chinese Coast Guard ship used a powerful water cannon Sunday, then rammed and slightly damaged an anchored Philippine government vessel off an island inhabited by Filipinos in the disputed South China Sea, the Philippine Coast Guard said. No injuries were reported. Elections. Kosovo held municipal elections Sunday, with the governing left-wing self-determination movement seeking to capture City Hall in the capital of Pristina, among lingering political tensions and strained relations with Serbia. Government shutdown. Vance issues warning. Vice President says more workforce cuts coming. Students, unions file suit. By Steve Peoples, Associated Press. Vice President J.D. Vance on Sunday said there will be deeper cuts to the federal workplace the longer the government shutdown goes on, adding to the uncertainty facing hundreds of thousands who are already furloughed without pay amid the stubborn stalemate in Congress. Vance warned that as the federal shutdown entered its 12th day, the new cuts would be painful, even as he said the Trump administration worked to ensure that the military is paid this week, and some services would be preserved for low-income Americans, including food assistance. Still, hundreds of thousands of government workers were furloughed in recent days, and in a court filing Friday, the Office of Management and Budget said well over 4,000 federal employees would soon be fired in conjunction with the shutdown. The longer this goes on, the deeper the cuts are going to be, Vance said on Fox News Sunday morning features. To be clear, some of these cuts are going to be painful. This is not a situation that we relish. This is not something we are looking forward to. Labor unions have already filed a lawsuit to stop the aggressive move by President Donald Trump's budget office, which goes far beyond what usually happens in a government shutdown, inflaming tensions between the Republicans who control Congress and the Democratic minority. The shutdown began on October 1st after Democrats rejected a short-term funding fix and demanded that the bill include an extension of federal subsidies for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, the expiration of those subsidies at the end of the year will increase in cost increases for millions needing health insurance. Trump and Republican leaders have said they are open to negotiations on the health subsidies, but insist the government must reopen first. For now, negotiations are virtually non-existent. House leaders from both parties pointed fingers at each other in rival Sunday appearances. We have repeatedly made it clear we will sit down with anyone, anytime, any place, said House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York. Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the presidency. It's unfortunate that they have taken a my way or the highway approach. They're trying. House Speaker Mike Johnson blamed Democrats and said they seem not to care about the pain the shutdown is inflicting. They're trying their best to distract the American people from the simple fact they've chosen a partisan fight, he said. Progressive activists, meanwhile, expressed new support for the Democratic Party's position in the shutdown fight. Ezra Levine, co-founder of the leading progressive protest group Indivisible, said he is feeling good about the strength of the Democratic position on health care. In more local news, Rock Springs Nature Center, the last hurrah. Fall Harvest Festival welcomes next season of outdoor fun. By Danette Beckett. D. Decatur. Avery Head, 7, won a cupcake after competing in her first cakewalk, or pumpkin walk, during the annual Harvest Festival at Rock Springs Nature Center. "You could pick a pumpkin or a cupcake or a sticker," she said, with chocolate icing covering her mouth and fingers. On Saturday, the Macon County Conservation District held the Fall Harvest Festival at Rock Springs with nearly 25 family-friendly activities. Avery's grandmother, Marge Soderoff, brought the little girl to the event after experiencing the fun last year. "We've done it in the past and loved it," Soderoff said. "The weather is perfect, and there's so many things to do." According to Alicia Callison, Director of Program Services, the festival has evolved throughout the past decade. The goal has been to remind visitors of Rock Springs activities in the cooler weather. "We're here all year round, and there's always something fun to do, even in the cold gray months," Callison said. "For a lot of people, this is kind of the last hurrah." The festival can draw several hundred people, but a successful event is dependent on weather, Callison said. "And today is a really good day," she added. The higher-than-average temperatures was a plus for the event. "A few years back, it was rainy and windy and chilly," Callison said. "We didn't have very many people, but last year we had about 500, which is good for this event." The fall-themed activities, including wagon rides, archery, canoeing, and pumpkin decorating, were ideal for outdoor family fun. This year, organizers of the festival added a spear-type throwing event called Atlatl, a Native American form of hunting. Atlatl throwing was once an activity hosted by the Conservation District. Historic Sites intern Nicholas Merrill reintroduced the activity during the festival. "He kind of spearheaded that," Callison said, "so we're giving it a shot this year." Merrill made the Atlatls through his education in Native American studies, "and I've also been a blacksmith," he said. According to Merrill, the Atlatl throwing requires less strength than archery. "They will either get tired or their arrows fall off," he said about the archery techniques. Atlatl throwing dates back to approximately 900 years ago. "It's easier for a lot of the kids to get the hang of it," Merrill said, "and it's something different for the adults." Other family-friendly activities designed to entertain the young visitors included story time in the library, children's crafts, and face painting. The fall activities will continue next week at Rock Springs Center. Visitors can collect treats while walking the treat trail from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Saturday, October 18th. "It will be after dark," Callison said, "so it's an opportunity to visit Rock Springs in the evening." 8 treat stations, including candy, crackers, pens, and seeds, will wander through the pine forest and the bike trail. There will also be some kind of fun, interactive educational activity, Callison said. The Fall Harvest Festival was an ideal opportunity to learn new activities as well, according to the staff. Alina Aguilar, 11, from Decatur, tried her hand at archery for the first time on Saturday. "He told me how to get the bow right, then he taught me how to get the arrow right," she said. "If they want to practice this using a bow and arrow, this is the perfect thing to do for it." McLean County Courts. Decatur man detained on meth delivery charge by Caitlin Klepek. Bloomington. A Decatur man remains jailed in McLean County as he faces a charge for unlawful delivery of methamphetamine. Justin T. Jackson, 36, is charged with a one-class X felony offense after being accused of selling a large amount of methamphetamine to an Illinois State Police confidential source this week. Jackson appeared before Judge Scott Black on Thursday for an initial appearance. During the hearing, Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt filed a petition to detain Jackson, arguing that no conditions could mitigate the danger. In reading the probable cause statement, Fitz said the charge stems from Tuesday, after police received a tip from an informant and set up a controlled buy. The informant said they knew of a man in Decatur who sells amphetamine in the McLean County area. The McLean County Sheriff's Office Narcotics Division opened an investigation and began messaging the defendant, Fitz said. Within these messages, Jackson bragged about getting large amounts of meth and that he can get up to 20 pounds, Fitz said. The informant arranged to meet with Jackson Tuesday at a Bloomington gas station. He met with Jackson at his vehicle and returned with 396.22 grams, or slightly under a pound, of reported meth that he had purchased from Jackson for $3,000. The substance field tested positive for the presence of meth. Fitz said the police then contacted a possible probable cause arrest and found Jackson in possession of $3,000, along with the cell phone used to set up the transaction. In arguing for Jackson's release, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace said Jackson is scheduled to start continuing education training for a new job next week. He also noted Jackson cares for two minor children and asked for the defendant to be released while ordered to report to pretrial services. Fitt disagreed, noting Jackson is already on probation for a Macon County case and is facing the possibility of being resentenced for that case. He also noted Jackson's criminal history is indicative of drug sales, and the offense he is on probation for was manufacturing and delivery of cocaine. Fitt added that Jackson has been on the court-ordered probation terms for 6 months. The defendant has had every opportunity to improve his lot, Fitz said. In making his decision known to detain Jackson, Black acknowledged the defendant's criminal history, which consists almost entirely of drug cases, including possession as well as dealing. Jackson was detained and scheduled for an arraignment at 9 a.m. October 24th. Decatur crews battle Saturday garage fire. By Danette Beckett, Decatur. The Decatur Fire Department responded to a garage fire early Saturday morning, also protecting another building close by. According to a press release issued by Deputy Chief Toby Jackson, crews were contacted at approximately 2:50 a.m. Saturday at the report of a garage fire. The first arriving engine found a fully involved fire in a detached garage located at 1092 East Muller, he stated. There was a neighboring garage in close proximity. The first crews fought to protect the building while the second unit extinguished the fire in the garage. Other crews arrived to assist with accessing the building and water supply, Jackson stated. The fire was quickly extinguished. The fire is under investigation through the Decatur Fire Department's Investigation Bureau. Court. Guard can stay but can't deploy for now. Associated Press, Chicago. National Guard troops sent to Illinois by President Donald Trump can stay in the state and under federal control, but cannot be deployed to protect federal property or go on patrol for now, an appeals court ruled Saturday. The decision comes after federal judge April Perry on Thursday ruled to temporarily block the National Guard deployment for at least 2 weeks, finding no substantial evidence that a danger of rebellion is brewing in Illinois during Trump's immigration crackdown. The appeals court on Saturday granted a pause in the case until it can hear further arguments. The on-again, off-again deployments stem from a political and legal battle over Trump's push to send the Guard to several U.S. cities in blue states. His administration claims crime is rampant in those cities, despite statistics not supporting that. If the president invokes the Insurrection Act, they can dispatch active military in states that fail to put down an insurrection or defy federal law. However, Perry said she found no substantial damage, that a danger of rebellion is brewing in Illinois. She followed up Friday with an opinion that cites a mix of law and history, including the Federalist Papers, which were written in 1787-88 to support ratification of the U.S. Constitution. There has been no showing that the civil power has failed, Perry said. The agitators who have violated the law by attacking federal authorities have been arrested. The courts are open, and the marshals are ready to see that any sentences of imprisonment are carried out. Resort to the military to execute the laws is not called for. The judges said there was significant evidence that federal agents have been able to carry out their work, noting huge increases in arrests and deportations. The 500 Guard members from Texas and Illinois were mostly based at a U.S. Army Reserve Center in Elwood, southwest of Chicago. A small number were sent to a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement building in Broadview. From page 2, Representative Budzinski urges bipartisan deal to end federal shutdown. Congresswoman draws red line on health care, by Brendan Moore, Springfield. U.S. Rep. Nikki Budzinski said reopening the federal government will take a bipartisan agreement, but she drew a red line in the sand on health care, warning that some premiums could double next year if Affordable Care Act tax credits are not renewed as part of the package. "We should be talking," Budzinski told Capital News Illinois in the interview. "We want to reopen the government. It's 9 days now into a shutdown. Next week will be the first week in which a federal worker will miss their paycheck. And so I think we owe it to the American people. We owe it to the federal workforce to be here working, to negotiate. But as of now, there is no deal in sight." The Senate adjourned for the week after several failed votes on a House-backed package that would have funded the government through November. The House wasn't even in session this week. The Republicans control the House and have a 53-47 majority in the Senate. It takes 60 votes to advance a funding bill in the upper chamber. All but a couple Senate Democrats voted against the House package. At the heart of the disagreement is the failure to renew the ACA tax credits, which are due to expire at the end of the year. The ACA exchange is where people without access to employer-provided health insurance or who don't qualify for safety net programs like Medicaid can purchase health care coverage. The enhanced tax credits were introduced in 2021 and later extended through 2025. This year, about 90% of the nearly 466,000 Illinois residents receiving health insurance through the Affordable Care Act marketplace were recipients of the tax credits. If they expire, annual premiums could more than double, estimating the average price could jump from $888 in 2025 to $1,904 in 2026. During a virtual roundtable, some of Budzinski's constituents laid out the consequences. Laura Petty, a house cleaner from Alton, said her family's health insurance premiums would increase from $310 to $800 per month without the tax credit. Petty and her family have started having conversations about the sacrifices they will have to make if the credits disappear. Do we stop contributing to our retirement? Can we afford to send our kid to college next year? It's a lot of uncertainty. "I've walked my whole life to get off Medicaid," said Crystal Abel. "Now I'm asking myself whether I need to give up my job and get it just so my kids can get health care." We'll return in a few minutes, taking a short break with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald in Review for Monday, October 13th. Please stay tuned.